The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Allen William Arbuthnot with the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
How goes it?
Well, Joel, you know, the world right now, it has been an interesting 2020. Obviously, I put a statement out on One Fall yesterday, on Fresh Take yesterday, about, you know, our support with everything here. It's a trying time. I'm going to do a show later this week discussing and talking everything. So just let you know, we are not ignoring what's going on in the world right now. But we're here, just like when we had some of these COVID pods, to not talk about what's going on in the news. For those that don't want to focus on the news, that need that little break to just talk and think about something else than what's going on. If you do need that break, that's what we're here. If you want more and you want more discussion about this, I will be doing a show on that later this week with the appropriate guests. So keep an eye on for that on the Fresh Take feed. As for the One Fall pod, we're just going to go and we're going to talk about the week in wrestling and try to ease some of the stuff that's been going on this week. And kind of taking escape for a bit. And we're not saying that we should escape from all these issues, but if you just need that half an hour break from watching the news and just want to think and talk about wrestling, that's what we're here to do for you tonight.
I think in a lot of ways, this is a break for you and me. I mean, even before we are having a very long conversation, even before we got to recording this show, and there wasn't a single thing about wrestling brought up on it. So I think there's a time and place for everything, and that you will be doing the time and the place with your podcast on the Fresh Take Network, and that I'm personally very burnt out and just want to talk about something dumb for a little bit.
And just know that the One Fall Podcast, Fresh Take, and We Talk Podcast does not stand for racism in any matter, and we will squeeze it out wherever we see it. But today we're here to talk about professional wrestling,
which has its own sordid history on that subject.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what Vince says on that tomorrow.
I mean, oh man, I don't know what's gonna happen. Isn't Martin Luther King, isn't he one of Vince's favorite, like,
yes,
figures?
Mm-hmm. I think he has something in his office, if I'm not mistaken.
So I'm kind of curious to see.
This is the first time that the McMahons may say something that contradicts their relationship with the Trumps. Not to politicize too many things, but it may be that Vince McMahon can have a more powerful statement than his friend Donald Trump.
I mean, not to get too political, but a gopher with cylinders clapping would have a more powerful statement than Donald Trump. I'm sorry if you support it. Well, I'm not sorry.
No, we're past that. Sorry. I don't care anymore. I've been very quiet on Fresh Take. I don't care if you don't want to download my podcast anymore. I don't care.
Yeah.
Don't download my podcast then. I'm not going to speak for the We Talk family. So, but as far as Fresh Take and this show, I don't care. We'll talk ill will of him. I don't care.
Oh, he is a low-hanging orange, and it's really easy to whack him a bunch of times, as you should, because he's an idiot.
He is.
Shifting gears.
Yeah, let's talk about professional wrestling, Joel. Again, our thoughts and prayers to the George Floyd family and all those that have been lost to a sense of violence, rest in power. And now let's ring that bell and shift gears and talk about professional wrestling. And AEW is going to lead us off because, you know, this is probably one of the best weeks that AEW has ever had. The rating popped up to 1 million at one point. They once again beat NXT in the ratings, And they probably hit their biggest angle that they've hit in their short history. I believe it's about the 1 year anniversary of AW as far as running storylines, not of Dynamite itself, if I'm not mistaken, Joel.
Yep. It's been a year since the last Double or Nothing where they were slowly starting to tell things. Then Dynamite picking up. The peak numbers for the numbers of AEW's Battle Royale on Wednesday topped 1 million total viewers and 500,000 in the 18 to 49 demo from the point of Orange Cassidy coming in and the finish. So freshly squeezed is a draw, I think.
I was telling you beforehand, he was supposed to do an interview with Katie Nolan on ESPN, and a few other ESPN places wanted him. So he was catching on, and you can tell by the ratings that he is a draw.
I don't understand these old school wrestlers that hate Orange Cassidy, because yes, he lives in a comedy gimmick, but he's money. You're printing money. He's among the top t-shirts and pro wrestling tees. He gets constantly the loudest reaction for literally doing nothing. He is saving his body, and he's doing little things, and when he wrestles, he's proven that he can have a good pro wrestling match. The guy, just, why not follow the money? Why? Just because he doesn't have the look and the build of a pro wrestler. Most of the people that are cheering him don't have a look and a build of a pro wrestler. He's connecting with that audience. He's the complete opposite of a guy like Roman Reigns or even the look of a Brian Cage. He is your regular, lazy human being that happens to be a very good, I think, a very good pro wrestler.
He's fantastic. I think, you know, for some of us, it took the Pac match to really see the talent, but you know, watching some of his stuff from Wrestling Circus or anything that he did beforehand, I mean, he was such a Reddit hit there for a while. And you can see, like, I think the one thing about him is, and I think a lot of wrestlers fall victim to this, is they don't know who they are and they don't know what their gimmick is. They just say, like, I'm a good wrestler. But they don't know what they are as a performer. And the one thing that OC gets is who he is as a performer. And he can elevate it back and forth by maybe doing a promo sometimes, doing the stuff with the ladders in the ladder match, doing the stuff he did in the Battle Royal. I think the one good thing about him is he knows who his character is. He knows what he has to do to perform, and he has confidence with that. You can tell some guys may have an idea what their character is or what they want to do, but they don't have full confidence in what they have. And that confidence comes through to the screen, and that's why he is where he is right now. To any, you know, we had this whole discussion about, and I want to have this with you at the end of the podcast, actually. So note this about the casual fan and what the casual fan is. So note that for the end, because I do want to have that discussion. But that, whatever that is, that those people are drawn in by Orange Cassidy whenever they watch AEW the first time, because number one, the likability of him, and then they're like, oh, this guy's actually good as well.
I mean, I remember the first time I saw Orange Cassidy was the Battle Royale, the casino Battle Royale that they had. And I remember him doing his kicks and being like, oh, I like this guy. And then just the more and more you saw from Orange Cassidy is like, yeah, I like this guy. And from the way he interacts on Twitter, for the way that he just the way he like you said, he gets his gimmick, and that's the biggest thing for him. And when you start being this big of a draw, and it's clearly Tony likes him based on the interaction that Tony and him constantly seem to have either online or behind the scenes, with Tony constantly having to tell him what the rules were for the ladder match, just little things like that I don't know. The sky's the limit for Orange Cassidy. I really feel like the sky's the limit for Orange.
I think, you know, the one thing that AEW has done really well that WWE is having troubles with, and I even kind of thought about this watching a guy like Gable on SmackDown, because it was the first SmackDown I had watched in a while. Again, he's just trying to escape in the world of pro wrestling for a bit, and then you have the whole Jeff Hardy thing, which we'll talk about. But then I watched Gable wrestle, and I'm like, this is still happening, the Shorty G thing? Like, this is still happening? And look, I think he's trying his best to buy into it and everything like that. That's a guy that could be the wrestler of the year And the one thing that everyone in AEW, for the most part, has had a chance of is to be their own guy, have their own ideas, and make it work. Even a guy like Kip Sabian, who is a little bit slower to the party, I think is really figuring himself out. Jimmy Havoc is really figuring out who he is. It's the one thing that Tony Khan, the Bucks, Cody, whoever is in charge of stuff, they're really letting people figure out their characters and run with it, where unfortunately in WWE, for the most part these days, you can't fully figure it out without being neutered. I mean, Zack Ryder told that story on Jericho's pod this week of they always had talks about the brass ring. Well, when Zack finally grabbed that brass ring, they stopped talking about grabbing the brass ring because it wasn't you weren't allowed to go for it anymore because they hadn't decided it. In AEW, the brass ring's there for you to take, and if you get it, that's fantastic. And OC is one of the main guys that get it. But again, guys like Jungle Boy, Jimmy Havoc, Kip Sabian are finding themselves right now. Sammy Guevara, Jack Hager is really finding out who he is again. I think Sean Spears is getting there a little bit. I didn't like the comedy gimmick from last week, but he seems to have it. People are finding themselves as characters. When you have confidence in yourself as a character, it comes off way better on the television.
Can I just say that poem that Jake Hager read?
Jake Hager, yeah.
Was amazing. Like, it just, it was such a it was fantastic. Just everyone in the Inner Circle, like that whole segment with Inner Circle just worked. And you're seeing these guys all growing and maturing. And I think a lot of people already want a polished WWE product where everyone knows what they are and it's full steam ahead. But I think they're at a different phase in their infancy. And that's where you got to realize you're not comparing them to a well-oiled 30-plus year business that's been running. This is year one and one plus for them. So you almost have to treat it like, well, this is their first year and a bit. Let them figure it out. Let them grow. Like, I mean, you look at it. It was reported that Cody and Tony Khan came up with the details within the Battle Royale, and the producers were Daniels, Cabana, and Billy Gunn. Like, you have all these great minds, and I've been meaning to save this for a podcast, but I figured out what WWE's problem is. Mm-hmm. You want to hear what WWE's problem is? And it ties in with what's working in AEW right now.
It may not be Vince. So,
The problem with WWE is they have a feedback loop. Mm-hmm. So creatively, when you've been doing the same thing over and over again, and as we've heard, Vince doesn't see things outside of the WWE bubble, and no. I'm sure that the people around him, like a Kevin Dunn, a Michael Hayes, et cetera, Bruce Pritchard, all have this feedback loop, where it's focusing on the past and focusing on what they used to do and what old wrestling that they really liked used to do. But they're not looking at how AEW is doing it, where you hear the Bucks and Matt Hardy talk about watching shows like Breaking Bad or Sons of Anarchy and going, how can we tie this into wrestling? And Tony Khan and just Cody and just getting a feedback from a whole bunch of different sources. And you're seeing how a melting pot of ideas from all over the place is helping to influence a product that's working better than what your stagnant, atrophying, dying product of WWE is. It's a feedback loop. They're not opening themselves up to other ideas. And you hear all these stories of someone like Zack Ryder talking about his experience there. And I'm sure you go through countless others that they don't fit the WWE mindset because the WWE mindset has been set in stone since, what, 95, 97, 98? And it hasn't diverted?
Well, it's that thing we constantly talk about of if you go watch a show in 98, a show in 2020 is relatively the same show, right? Yeah. But if I go watch a show from 1992, it's different. If I watch a show from 85, it's different. But a show from like 95, 96, at least structure-wise till now, is pretty much the exact same. They haven't changed where they are. And I think even with the problem for them is even with this time during COVID, you could have had a chance to be more creative with things. And they generally aren't very creative with things. You kind of always see the same type of thing over. And that's not to say they don't have entertaining shows. I enjoyed SmackDown this week. I thought it was a really fun show. I did enjoy watching SmackDown. I had a good time watching that. I can't comment on Raw or NXT because I didn't see them this week, but watching SmackDown this week, I actually enjoyed the show, but I enjoyed AEW way more because I felt like everything had a meaning, everything had a purpose. It felt like a big show, AEW, this week, and I don't know if that was the intent or not. SmackDown just felt like another SmackDown, but it was like, oh, this is a fun wrestling show. And as far as your like wrestling thing is, the game of telephone, you're hearing that, you know, with all these guys that are leaving for AEW, Vince is a problem to a degree, but you're hearing Vince be like, oh, we're Revival, why aren't you doing this? Or I thought we said that you agreed to this, or the stuff with Luke Harper, why aren't you doing stuff? I thought we had you booked. And then the game of telephone persists. And that was the big thing with Harper, right? Like, Vince is like, why aren't you on the show? I want you on the show. Why aren't you there? You're in the Battle Royal. That's a big problem.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, that situation. And you look at how AEW closed the show with Mike Tyson and Chris Jericho. There's a reason why Hulk Hogan always pre-cut his shirts. And I hope Tyson pre-cuts his shirts moving forward. But I what do you think of the segment as someone that's a little more on the outs with AEW, like just outside viewing more?
Well, so again, I guess this is where this casual conversation is going to have to come into a degree. So let's table that for the end. Or maybe we put have it here. So first, I guess, how would you discuss what a casual fan is, Joel? Is a casual fan someone like me that cares about it, but I'm not going to fully be drawn in to watch every single week of television now? Or is the casual fan kind of what Cody and Tony talk about, the lapsed fan that stopped watching altogether? Or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both, because I think when you say the word casual fan, it's someone that will casually view your product. And that can either be someone that is just viewing pay-per-views or someone that's occasionally tuning into TV, kind of keeping up to date on stuff. I think there is that spot where fans just done with pro wrestling because of what they've seen in WWE or somewhere else and just turned them off.
So I'm the pay-per-view side of that, as you know. Like, I'll watch the pay-per-views. I don't really watch a lot of the TVs. But I will admit, I had a good time watching Double or Nothing. The Stadium Stampede, 15 hours, by the way. Holy hell. I can't wait to hear the pod of Jericho talking about that. You guys, number one, I think you guys did a very good job of prompting it up. I mean, we had the Revival debut or whatever they are. What are they called now?
FTR, because there was an issue with the name The Revolt.
Oh, is there? Okay. So I'm just going to say The Revival for right now, and I don't remember their names. So if I say Wilder or Dawson, forgive me. I don't know the actual names right now. Just like we said, Swagger for the while, and like we said, Luke Harper and Dean Ambrose. We'll get it eventually. So as kind of that casual fan, I think you and Mo did a really good job of promoting it. You know, hearing the Revival, they're like, well, I want to see how that happens. Then I heard this Battle Royal was really, really fun. And then I heard the Britt Baker part was really, really fun from some other people. And like, you got to see the Britt Baker segment. And I've been hearing that about Britt Baker for a while, that this character's really, because the last time I saw Britt, I was like, she sucks when she was a babyface. I did not think she was getting over, but now she's fantastic. And I've heard about the interaction with her and Schiavone, so I wanted to do that. And then you hear about the Tyson thing, and then as a casual fan, they hook, line, and singered me in. I'm like, I got to see this. I want to see Mike Tyson. He's been in the news, and I want to see what they're going to do. And it's with Jericho, and they paid off a 10-year-old angle, and I really want to see the two of them fight. So it drew me in. And not only did it drew me in, I think the more important thing is it didn't just drew me in for that angle. It drew me in to watch the whole show. And now I'm invested in stuff that's going to happen next week. I'm really excited to see Cody and Jungle Boy next week.
They did a very good job. They took, because we always talk about a pay-per-view bump for ratings. They did a very good job taking that pay-per-view bump and giving you a reason why to keep watching again. And it's one of the things that, you know, I can't remember the last time I finished a Monday Night Raw or SmackDown and gone, wow, I need to see next week. I need to know what happens next. Like, you have to give me the episode now. Whereas AEW, I'm more like, okay, this is all set up, and I'm going to keep moving forward. Here's a question for you that ties in with the talk of the casual fan and AEW. Mm-hmm. So there's been a couple comments saying that AEW's comedy schnick, like the Stadium Stampede, is going to turn off casual fans, and no one will ever come back to watch it except the hardcore fans that are just loyal to no end to AEW. Do you see stuff like the Stadium Stampede potentially turning fans off and being a problem for AEW, or do you see it as being an alternative that could potentially reinvigorate fans as giving them something different?
See, I didn't see that as much of a comedy match, really. I think there is elements of comedy into it, but it's no different than you could say the same thing if people are saying that about the Money in the Bank match. There is comedy in that that people like Mo absolutely hated, that people like I kind of liked, and other people like our friend Adam that absolutely hated it. So I think there's a side of that. I think the one thing the Stadium Stampede really helped with as well was that there was actually some good wrestling on top of it as well. So I think people watching a match like that, they'll want to watch it. There was at least stuff like Jericho with Aubrey and the replay, or getting the chalk lines all over him again. There was stuff like that. But for the most part, I think it led to a very exciting match that you get to have. And I got to give them credit, too, for not doing the blood match they were going to do. That's another credit to AEW. And look, I'm someone that was came on this podcast multiple times and said, like, I'm a pure WWE guy and everything like that, and I always will have a special part for my WWE. But just as a fan and loving story and narrative, and you and I had this conversation, like, what does it take a casual fan to watch it? I still don't know, because I really, really miss New Japan right now. I miss Okada. I miss the wrestling. But I think letting the characters grow, and even in that – you left Money in the Bank. I didn't feel like there was character growth for anyone. I had a good time. It was fun. But I didn't think there was character growth for anyone, even Otis winning. But for the Stampede, I thought there was character growth for Adam Page, for Hager, for Sammy Guevara, for Aubrey, the freaking referee, God's up. For LAX, doing the whole thing with the bell getting ringed, and I was like, he's like, what? Huh? And it took me a second to be like, why is he? I'm like, they paid off the bell ringing in his ear. That's amazing.
And then they gave him the gift with the earmuffs, yeah. And he's like, oh, okay, now everything's normal again.
Yeah, like, that's amazing. Good job on you.
And I mean, you look at it, like, the little things of, like, all these trophies of Sammy being like, oh yeah, COVID's really screwed everything up, so sorry, I couldn't get anything else. And like, just the little things that I think, you know, pay off long term and give you reward people with the little things. And when you reward people with a big thing, then it means that much more, because you've been ingrained to expect a payoff for stuff. So then when it happens and when it's done right, it's almost more gratifying for a viewer. Being like, oh, I've watched and I finally got to see Kenny Omega turn on Hangman. And Hangman's the biggest babyface for AEW. Like, this is crazy to see the story progress to this point. And it's just, like, I'm really glad they haven't done Blood and Guts yet. Because I think that's your first show back with a live audience.
I agree. I guess my only real problem, and it's a very minor one, right? The very minor one is, I wish Jericho would have had a better way to get to the Tyson feud. You know, maybe like an interaction or something. But I'm, you know, when it all came down and he came down with guys like Rashad and Belfort, which added to it, by the way, I thought it all worked out. But I would have like maybe like across a path or something. But, you know, they're paying off an angle from 10 years ago. I guess that's a very small gripe. But overall, when it came down, he had the UFC legends that he had with them. It really worked out well.
Yeah, it speaks to AEW's bank account. It really speaks to the backing that they've got, because that had to have been a pretty penny for that. And it's working out tenfold, because they got all these hits for doing this. And not only that, but it's generating stuff for guys like Sammy or Orange Cassidy that will come back and watch and be like, oh, hey, I like so-and-so. I like this Kenny Omega. Who's this Kenny Omega? And then that potentially leads to a fan for Japan, because they'll go down a Kenny Omega rabbit hole. So I think there's a lot of benefits from this. And I'm going to say it now. I think they beat down Orange Cassidy for a reason other than to take him out of the Battle Royale. I think he's going to have to team up with Tyson to take on Jericho and Guevara. Wow. So Orange Cassidy and Mike Tyson versus Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara in 2020.
You're going to talk about the rub, right? Like, that is that's such a rub for him. I mean, especially since we've seen some of the – I don't have the exact numbers, if you can remember them, but some of the stuff that Tyson's being offered for some of these boxing matches are crazy. So Mike Tyson, is he going to have a very nice – whenever he can fight again in 2020, whenever actually a boxing match is going to be good. And if Tyson wins, he's going to have a nice 2021 because people are ready to see Mike Tyson fight again. The one thing people love in sports and with the story is they love a redemption story. And, you know, Tyson's redemption story, there's one terrible side of that that we won't get into. But there's also the side of him just quitting on his life and having the wrong people around him, like he talked to, I think, with Ariel Helwani. And having that massive weight and just looking like he was done. And now at 50, just looking fantastic. Because, I mean, you know, we just had The Last Dance. And you think about the top athletes of our time, the athletes, and you talk about them, and they are big event athletes, and they matter. Unfortunately, you and I weren't around during Muhammad Ali, but he's obviously in that conversation. But during our lifetime, it's Michael Jordan, it's Tiger Woods, and it's Mike Tyson.
Yep.
And LeBron's obviously all respect. A great athlete, and you can argue if he's in that conversation, but as far as those three and the setting the plate that they do, those guys are guys that have superseded their sports and are bigger than those sports. I'm not saying LeBron isn't, but as of the past 30 years, those are the three biggest athletes. Yep. And you could argue at times Tyson was bigger than Tiger. He may have been bigger than Mike if it wasn't for shoes. So getting Tyson and doing this is so huge. And to put him with OC potentially, like you're suggesting, it's huge for OC, and it's huge for AEW, and people are like, oh, WWE did it. So what? Wrestling recycles itself all the time. I think a lot of WWE stands are just mad because WWE didn't bring back Tyson and do something productive with him. AEW had a chance to do it. They're a young company. They're getting the eyes on themselves for doing this. I say all for it, and I love how they do. I love that he brought up the UFC legends, too. I think that added to it, and he made it even more badass.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing with Tyson. You've got a guy that clearly is having a blast right now because you saw it in his promo with Jericho, like just how he's go. You can see almost like a childlike smile on his face as he's sitting there and battling Jericho, and Jericho's incredible. So this is the best person to pair Tyson up with. So you got a guy that's enjoying himself. In Mike Tyson, and you've got an amazing, amazing performer in Chris Jericho, and having guys like Sammy and Hager around, this is going to be a rub for a lot of guys. It's not just going to be something for Jericho, and it's gonna help AEW in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give a rub to Orange Cassidy, it's almost even better because you're solidifying guys that could play a bigger role for your company in a couple years.
Well, it gives you another star. You're making more and more stars, right? And like I said, I really liked what I saw from Sabian and Havoc. When I last saw Havoc, and you can tell me how long this thing's been going on with Havoc, but I thought, oh, another stupid hardcore guy, and I just didn't see it, and I didn't like what I seen. But and Kip Sabian seemed to be a little bit slower to the draw, but they saw something with him. It does seem that they really found something, especially with Kip, but Havoc's figured out something for himself as well now.
See, and that's the biggest thing with this. Everyone is really impatient for stuff, but I think sometimes it's just a matter of letting things breathe for a bit, and then something hits and something clicks, and then it moves on to the next thing.
Yeah, and so I mean, I don't want to make this such an AEW love fest, but look. When you have a pretty good pay-per-view, but then you have a very good show like this and you create the buzz, you know, you deserve that ability to get the praise that you do. And they've done a very good job of that, of building up. I mean, if we'll have the kind of year in review for them in September when it happens, but there's been up and down dynamites. There's been bad dynamites, but I think they've done a very good job of, you know, giving goodwill to those that will go and tune in. I will say this is the first real full AEW I've watched for a while. And my problem at first was like, wow, it's kind of an overload of matches. But I feel like they finally kind of, and you told me this, like they got it. You know, they had the tag tournament at that point, like to fill their balance out. I feel like they finally figured out the perfect balance for their show.
And the thing is, AEW has at least given me the benefit of the doubt where you can go, they've learned and they've grown, so they're going to get better and they're going to keep learning, and it's just going to be better for everything.
Well, and we learned, if you listen to the fans, you're going to get good results. It's something as trivial as Sonic the Hedgehog. People are like, we really don't like this Sonic. Can you change it? And I enjoyed the film, but I can't even say if it was a good film or not. And some people are like, was this a good film? Or we were just happy that the studio listened to us. And when you do listen to your fans, you're going to get better results. AEW has seen things that don't work, like the Liberians. Okay, we're going to get off of this. Where WWE or other wrestling companies in the past, WCW, even Impact, they hear gimmicks bad. Like, no, we're going to make it work. We're going to make it work. You'll like it. And they're like, okay, Liberians, nobody likes. Hands washed. We move on. Oh, you know, the stuff with the with Evil Uno and stuff isn't really working. Okay, we messed up. Move on. I that's the one thing I think you just don't see from a lot of wrestling companies, but they are willing to listen, and they have done a good job of changing with that listen, with that feedback.
Yeah, yeah. And that it makes a difference. Like you go through, like if Tyson and Jericho didn't work at all, I'm sure that they'd have to pivot to find a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sometimes.
You do. I think they've done a very good job of building everything up. This Tyson thing is fantastic. You know, when Blood and Guts was leaning in before we hit the pandemic, you and I were like saying, I think they're going to hit 1 million people for the rating for the first time. And it dipped up there for Cassidy. And we don't know how many other times it has dipped up beforehand. But good on them. And I think this week could see 1 million for their rating.
I'd love it. I'd absolutely love for them to hit that. AEW and NXT having good ratings is good for wrestling. It tells you that there's fans kind of slowly starting to trickle back in.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, NXT's ratings were a little bit better this week, too. So it does tell me that people are ready to re-engage and watch wrestling. I mean, we're dealing with the situation too, Joel, where there's not a lot of new stuff to watch.
Yeah.
Netflix has kind of gone through all their stuff now. HBO doesn't, at least as far as I'm aware, like have that big show. So and no major sport other than EPL and soccer returns. But as far as America goes, that aren't soccer fans, there's going to be a lack of anything now for 2 months. As far as new, and that's where now, where we thought they would maybe make that move originally, now they have a real opportunity to really, you know, make the move going forward.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious to see what happens next.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go talk about some unfortunate things. The Jeff Hardy angle from SmackDown. They've done this before. It's not like they haven't done this with Jeff before. I think my one criticism of it is people are, you know, there's so much stuff with the police right now. I think the last thing people wanted to do was turn on their television and see the police, the first thing they see. And it's not like the police are done in a negative sense. That's not the case. But you don't, you're just like, I'm over, you know, with all this stuff with the police. And the first thing you see is the police right away, right? And then you have, I think the biggest thing is still harping on Jeff Hardy as the substance abuse person and hitting an angle on that. And it just didn't hit right with me. And he agreed to it. So, yes, he is partially into this. He agreed to do it. He could have said no. But still, I just not a fan.
No, not at all. Like, I just... You see it, and, like, watching the clip a few times of how they ran it, like, you can see him kind of sitting there, and it's like, I don't know what's... Like, it just... It didn't click for me in the sense of, I don't know if the payoff is worth what you've done to set it up. That's the big thing with something like this, is if the payoff is worth the setup, then it's something that you can talk about. But the setup just seems... like a, not necessarily misfire, but just a very poor setup in the sense of you shouldn't have done it.
It's just a, I mean, it's just a bad publicity with it. I mean, we could talk about the who did it and everything like that, which, you know, wrestling has great done stuff with who did it. But even the Austin stuff, I wasn't even a huge fan of back in the day with that. And that led to, obviously, I did it for The Rock.
I did it for people.
It seems too obvious to be Sheamus. I don't know who it could have been.
He's been trying to kill everyone, so.
Yeah, I mean, he already killed Elias once. Why not try it again, right? So, I mean, knowing our luck, it's going to be Matt Riddle.
Oh, man, if there's a guy, he's going to be a Vince Russo. That's what they're going to do. They're going to have him dress up as Vince Russo.
RVD. It's RVD 2.0 time.
Riddle is so incredibly talented. He has such a great look. He has such a great presentation. Like, I remember in 2017 when there was all this buzz about Matt Riddle on the indies, all this buzz and all this buzz. Oh. They're going to screw him up, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should.
He's with the good guys. If we're going to be not negative wrestling fans, like, it's hard to do sometimes. He's got AJ Styles. He's got Daniel Bryan. That's two halves
of the
greatest wrestlers of the last 20 years. He's got Chad Gable. He's got Cesaro. Hell, man, Sheamus will give you a good match. Sheamus is a fantastic veteran. He'll give you a good match. Nakamura, Dolph Ziggler, Lindsay Dorado. You know, there is a fantastic roster there to wrestle. So that part doesn't worry me as much. It's how they're going to handle them. As far as the wrestling side of things, it's good. I mean, I almost wonder when Backlash finishes and Strowman moves to Miz and Morrison, are they going to go back to this Wyatt thing and they just kind of save Bray for a bit because he's, you know, has a baby and everything. And congratulations to, Rotunda and Bray and his kid, I guess JoJo, hey?
Yeah.
But congratulations on that. And maybe they'll bring Bray back, or do they really hype Riddle up and they go right to him and Strowman? I can't see that. I think it'll more likely be that AJ wins the belt, and that it's AJ and Riddle for the belt.
Oh, yes. And you got to keep AJ happy, so you got to give him a good wrestling match, because AJ doesn't seem like the most happy of campers right now.
We forgot Gulak, by the way, too, who re-signed with the company, which was a little bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, catch point. Him and Riddle had a stable called Catch Point. Maybe they do Catch Point with Brian in it.
I'm okay, and then maybe you could do when Sammy comes back. Those three against Sammy, Nock, and Cesaro.
I'm sold.
Yeah, that'd be a fun match to do. So there is I think he went to the right roster.
Yes,
I think it's one of the reasons AJ wanted to get away, because AJ, number one, he didn't want to be reminded of Anderson Gallows and that loss on Raw, but he also, I think, wanted better competition, which is on SmackDown right now.
And I'm just going to call him by his indie name. Donovan Dijak is apparently going to be called up to Raw. So he's a big boy that face Drew. Like that could be a nice little thing that you could throw in and have Drew face as something different as you continue,
I'm all for that.
To try to keep Drew up.
I'm all for that. Dijakovic has been a very pleasant surprise. Had some nice up and downs in NXT. I think he's one guy I actually do feel a lot better with almost on the main roster. I think he did great in NXT. I think he'll have a decent run on the main roster, or it could be really bad and he could be what they did with Archer, where Archer had some ups and downs and he was on the main roster and they never really used him correctly. It could be Dijakovic could be the same way, because we have seen he can be a fantastic, fantastic hand for them.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, a little bit of positive there, WWE-wise. Like I said, I really enjoyed SmackDown this week. I thought it was really good. Apparently, AJ and Bryan have a really good match next week. AJ and Nock had a really good match. It seems it's kind of funny, you know, with AJ and Bryan there, it's like the two of them are the two guys that they really need to appease, because those are two guys you do not want to go to Japan or AEW. And it seems like the two of them are really carrying SmackDown now and just having good wrestling matches. Who would have thought, Joel, that that would work?
You mean two guys getting in the ring and having a quality match could draw people in?
Yep.
Well, you're going to have to tell Japan that and pair Okada up with Ibushi and let him wrestle.
Yeah, I mean...
I miss Japan.
Yeah. Can we have a moment of silence for Japan? And just, I miss Okada. I can't wait to see a Rainmaker again. It's almost, though, like, Japan now has been gone for so long, you almost be like, I kind of just need fans to be there for the Rainmaker.
I need a Rainmaker towel or whatever the thing you'll see in the crowd that people will have, the big massive thing that has the dollar bill and Okada's. Okada's this generation's Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Ric Flair, yada yada yada. He is incredible. And the fact that he can translate to a Western audience just based on his wrestling and his charisma is incredibly remarkable. It's amazing how many guys Japan has that I have not heard a English promo from Okada, Naito, Ibushi, or Tanahashi, and none of them has changed my views on any of them. Suzuki or Ishii, like, Jesus, Suzuki is, just as a note, Cody has the TNT Open Challenge, and it's listed for non-AEW talents.
Mm.
You could do Marty, you could do Okada, you could do Tana. I'm getting way ahead of myself, but...
This is where I wish, and they've never done it, but I wish just the reaction. You imagine one day if, like, Cena came out, and that would be... such a backwards story, just to the fact that Cody never came out for the U.S. title, which is kind of the thing that ironically led to AEW really happening, because the idea was that Cody wanted to debut after Dusty's death to come back into the Open Challenge, right?
Yeah.
And that they said it wouldn't work, we want you to be Stardust. And just the pop, you and I talked about it at the time, the pop that would have been there for Cody coming back, and then if he would have won the U.S. title, would have been phenomenal, but we didn't do it.
And you know what the payoff was for John Cena's U.S. title run? Alberto Del Rio.
Right. Well, we won't talk about scum like that right now.
Just circumvent that. You know, this is really smart on AEW, because... the one thing I will say is TNT has really gotten behind that title. Like, really, really just seem to be having fun with it. And when the guy cutting the paychecks for your TV is having fun, I think that's a good sign for you long term. And I think having this open to others creates an opportunity for, like, Marty, you almost want to have where he shows up and it's a bit of a storyline for Marty, but you could have Flip suddenly show up for a pay-per-view match with Cody.
Well, once the pandemic is cleared and we're getting back to having fans in the stands and everything like that, and I think these cross partnerships with other promotions is going to be so huge for them. And obviously, they'll never do it with Vince in charge. The one comment that Hunter had, do you think Hunter would do this?
No, I don't. I very much have my doubts, because if you go to the board of directors and go, so John Cena is hurt, well, how did he get hurt? He wrestled on a different channel for a different company, and he's gone for 6 to 8 months. I feel like crap would roll downhill. So if there's a lot more of a gamble, but if you're a smaller company, there's not as much of a risk.
Right. So,
and I think it creates some genuine surprises where you don't know who's going to come out and challenge Cody.
I mean, and I think the ultimate end game with it is it's good that the way they did with everything. MGF is ultimately going to win this title.
Yes, I do. I think so, because I don't know. MJF is probably ready, but you also have to be careful where you don't want to do this and not have a bunch of baby faces built up for him, where with the TNT title, you can do something with him that I think gives a little bit more protection, and you can help really flesh everything out around. Because ultimately, I was thinking about this, a money feud for MJF is EC3. Because EC3 has shed the MJF-like gimmick, and now he's a kind of like a Tyler Durden, shedding personal belongings and focusing on internals and not focusing on likes and social media and chasing things. I think those two could, and I think the two of them could have a tremendous battle on the mic. If I'm fantasy game, just.
No, and I don't think you're wrong. EC3, we're still like 60 days away from those things, right?
Yeah. I've loved what EC3 has done. I can't say enough nice things about the videos that he's created. I really loved his Henning video and his Angle video. I thought both of those were money.
I think it's a guy too that has taken time, figured out his character. WWE had an image of what they wanted him to do or not want to do, and you kind of pointed to after the Ambrose match that things were just done for him. This is a situation where he now has a chance to be himself and just be such a big star. And AEW, you don't want to take him on everyone, but there's just so much talent that you would think that they could have the opportunity to just make superstars that weren't as big guys as WWE, and that it's hard to pass up on a Rusev. It's hard to pass up on a Matt Cardona because you know he can be over. You know, it's hard to think about that.
I'm really curious to see what happens with their second show, because I think that could give guys another life elsewhere and help have a big roster, but give guys spots. And one of the things that I believe JR revealed was they were going to start doing house shows. They were going to, just before the pandemic, they were going to start doing some house shows, which I think you would have seen an uptick in the in-ring performance, because the one thing with like any other job is that repetition. And man, if they start doing a small house show tour for these guys, and they could have done that heading into the UK, like they could have very easily helped make just the ability to get guys over in different ways and test things out on a house show circuit.
And that's when you talk about the guys that do house shows in WWE or WCW, that's when they have the most fun. So that's when they're going to have the most fun compared to Dynamite. It's going to be interesting. But I also think a big part of that is it's going to kind of be maybe doing what TNA did with their house shows, right? It's not overdoing the house shows. It's, you know, maybe once in a while doing them. And remember when TK was on Austin's pod, Austin's like, well, how are you going to do them, or you're not going to do them because this is a draw with revenue? And TK was very stern at the time. He's like, I don't know if we are or not. He's like, maybe we don't, maybe we do. If we do, we're going to think about it. So obviously, again, they didn't rush into things, which I think is the biggest thing for them. They took their time and they adjusted to things the right way. And if they were thinking about this after the pandemic, they thought about this afterwards and like, okay, this is going to work. Let's start going. Much like they thought about the London show, right? So they must have been thinking potentially about Canada shows. So again, just credit to them for thinking about things correctly.
Yeah. And just another AEW note, and then we'll flip over to NXT. There was an AMA from David Starr a while ago, and David Starr is very, very much pushing for union. And in his AMA, he said he's had conversation with Tony about this stuff. And Tony's been very receptive of just having a conversation with him, as well as they've just talked wrestling and nothing's materialized. But that's a guy that you could bring in and have a really good feud with Cody, because David Starr is an incredible promo. And if he's not, I don't think he'd ever sign on the dotted line for a long-term deal because of what he's trying to work towards. But if you could have him come in and do like a three-month feud with Cody over like the TNT title, or and just work different guys for a couple months, I think it's that openness that gives you a chance to tell really good stories and help leave your roster better than what it was before. And if a guy like David Starr can help bring a little bit of positive change to the behind the scenes of pro wrestling, then it's you gotta support stuff like that.
I agree, and I mean, I think David Starr is going to be looked at. He one day, if we did a Dark Side of the Ring, he will be looked at in a different way, right? He's been someone that had to be vocal for change, and we're seeing that a lot in the world right now. Sometimes you have to be vocal for change. If you shut up, nothing can happen. And as far as him with the pro wrestling side of things, he's sacrificed himself as a pro wrestler to be vocal about a more positive future for wrestlers. Ryan Reeves, Ryback was on this for a while, and he's kind of quieted. But David Starr has not relented on any of this.
Yeah, no, he has not. And he's taken a hit booking-wise, because there's a certain big company in North America that has other little companies that doesn't like what Mr. Starr has been saying, and they have kind of cut off the money that he's able to make. But I think if you show, and he said from wrestling friends, the companies that seem to be the most like the corporation that seem to be the most wrestler friendly are AEW and New Japan. So I mean, this, if you want to bring change, sometimes you got to do a few little things. And if you can bring more eyeballs to your what you're working towards and do something with AEW, then I think everyone benefits. I think David Starr would absolutely garner attention and draw in some eyeballs because of his promo ability. And he's a good wrestler, too.
He's a great wrestler. I mean, he's a great promo, too, as you know. For the OTT, that one set that he had, I think it was Devlin, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
He's showing the ability that he could be, no pun intended, a star. But he has let certain agendas go ahead of that, and that's why I kind of give him credit, because he's trying to set certain agendas and things that he's seen that he doesn't like for the betterment of pro wrestling.
Yeah, he's absolutely outspoken, and you don't have to agree with his views, but I think just having a person that has that mindset, it's important to have, because I feel like listening to other people's opinions and views on things and sitting there and having an open, honest conversation is the best way to grow and progress forward as a society.
Absolutely. Do you have anything else, or is that it?
Well, there's two things.
Oh, two things.
Okay. One is a good thing, and one is not such a good thing.
Let's get the not good thing, because I'd like to finish on a positive note.
So, independent hardcore deathmatch wrestler, Danny Havoc, has passed away. He retired in 2017. He started in 2005, retired in 2017, and then came out of retirement for a benefit show in 2020. I will not discuss how he passed away, because that in itself is hasn't been confirmed yet, but it sounds like it's a very sensitive subject. And that's all I'll leave it at there. I think you can interpret what I'm trying to lay down. You're seeing an outpouring like from David Starr, Adam Cole, like this guy. I don't know a lot on him. I do know that he was featured on The Wrestler, the Vice documentary series that they did on different wrestler over the course of different areas across the world. So he was one of the focuses that they had. So another unfortunate thing to happen in pro wrestling. More details have come out about Hannah Kamara that are just gut-wrenchingly tough to hear about.
There was an
article that I would recommend by the Daily Beast. I believe it was the Daily Beast that did it, Let me just double check and make sure. Yeah, it was the Daily Beast, and it kind of really spells out the story of what happened over there, and it sucks.
Yeah, I guess I was surprised in some way. Like, this got major publicity for everything, and you know, in that sense, you get more news outlets, not just the Dave Meltzers or the Sean Rosses or the Pollocks of the world, giving you facts of stuff. And the more facts that come out about it, the more devastating the entire thing really is. And last week was globally this week, mainly in the States, it's a hard week with everything. Last week, as far as wrestling, was Wrestling Family. We took the Hard Knocks with Hannah Kimura and with Shad. And that one, the Hannah Kimura continues to have stuff as far as Terrence House related to it and other, unfortunately, race relations with it as well. So that, the topic of this week had bled into with that story as well and added even more heartbreak with everything you've heard from that.
No easy way to transition, but you want to get to the last good thing and then...
Sure.
And he's held the title for a year.
Baby!
If you're going to look at their world champions of Drew McIntyre, Braun Strowman, and Adam Cole, I think Adam Cole may be the coldest champion that they have right now.
I don't know if that would have happened if not, but like, also like, aside of the Gargano feud, what's a hot program that he's had as champ?
He really hasn't. It's Velveteen has been flat. Like
that could have been big, but then the pandemic happened, so we'll never know.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think Adam Cole's a tremendous talent, but I think AEW's booking has been subpar for a while.
NXT. AEW, yeah.
Oh, God.
Save you on that one, bud.
NXT has really, really, since they've gone live Wednesday, I feel like it just hasn't clicked. And it's a shame because Adam Cole is an incredibly talented guy. But I just think you didn't have enough other challenges built up for him.
And they should have hit Finn. They should have hit with Finn. And they also sort of went after like the cross of Survivor Series. He was red hot. And I don't think they hit off of that as fast as they could.
Yeah.
They didn't hit with Finn as hot. But he had it. He was red, white hot. And so was Finn at the time. And they butchered both of those. And the KO thing like you talked about before.
It's crazy because Adam Cole coming out of November should be on par with Drew McIntyre for just in terms of heat, mm-hmm. But he's colder than Braun Strowman.
Yeah, it's not good that he's that cold, and I think a big part of it is I don't know what it is with NXT why it's so cold right now, but it does outside of Cross and Scarlett Bordeaux. I don't really feel like I'm hearing anything from, and I guess the Chelsea Green stuff with Robert Stone kind of got a little bit of a hit this week. I'd say it's kind of got something going, but I don't think it's a big of a deal. I think it's just kind of people like Chelsea Green's talented. What are we doing? Like, you have this thing with the Robert Stone brand and now it's already done. Like, I don't really know what's going on there. Charlotte, that hasn't taken off the ground. Finn had it for a second. November, they seemed to have it, right? And they went into that Christmas break, and they had the back-to-back weeks where they had beaten AEW, and it wasn't AEW as bad as like NXT was kind of hot after coming off of Survivor Series. And then they just never took hold of that momentum, especially with Adam Cole.
Yeah, and I mean, Rhea Ripley is cold right now. Like,
yeah,
I don't...
that's another one.
Like, I don't know if that's someone that should take the title off Charlotte, even though she is going to probably win it.
Keith Lee was hot. I mean, Survivor Series, they did all that work to really prop up NXT. And Mo came on here and was like, it's not going to matter. And we got to that pay-per-view in February. And I think that was when we were like, was that a bad takeover? Or was that an in-between takeover? But we all, you know, it's kind of one of those things when you see a bad movie, like when I saw Indiana Jones, The Crystal Skull, you're walking like, no, it's Indiana Jones. It's good. Because you don't have bad takeovers. And I don't think it was a bad takeover, but we're like, was it, like, great, though? And that's kind of when it started. Who knows what would have happened if they would have had Takeover Tampa. I'm sure it would have been phenomenal, because they normally are. But if you're talking about any wrestling company that's been hurt by the pandemic, weirdly, it's helped Japan more, because you're more excited for Japan, and it's really hurt NXT.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I think one of the things that hurt it, and you kind of hit the nail sort of on the head, like the hammer's kind of going in the direction that I think it needs to. I think one of the things that hurt NXT was the formation of AEW and not having being the feeder system for all the indie darlings. It's now that got cut off in a lot of ways, and they didn't get Marty, they didn't get the Bucks, they didn't get Kenny, they didn't get Hangman, they didn't get any of these guys that could come in and pop a crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think they had to change the way they book stuff, and I don't know if they're prepared to change how to book things. Because now you've got guys that should be moving on that aren't, and now you've got to find a new story for them, and I think they're struggling with that.
They are. Even Ciampa doesn't feel like he's... I think even with the Ciampa and the Johnny breakup too, that felt like something that we didn't need. Like, no one really wanted that. And then the match wasn't very good. The Johnny turn... There's been some stuff I've kind of chuckled at, but it's not been that good. I talked to you about the Mia Kim and Keith Lee segment this week. I didn't find that particularly good. And even Ciampa, yes, he's part of this Cross and Bordeaux feud, but they are the hot parts of it, not Ciampa.
Yeah.
But that's because Ciampa never felt cold.
Yeah. And this is like with Cross and Bordeaux, they're the new things in. Mm-hmm. So of course they're gonna feel hot, but where are they in 6 months?
That's the thing. None of the core NXT guys that felt hot, Adam Cole, Keith Lee, Velveteen Dream, although there's other factors at play that we'll leave alone for now. Johnny Gargano and Ciampa, none of them feel hot. Where this time last year, you could have those matches over and over again. It was like the SmackDown 6 in some ways of like, this is phenomenal, and you're adding Jay Djokovic to it and Damian Priest to it, and you're adding Jordan Devlin to the mix, and you're adding the Cruiserweight title to the mix with everything. And I'm probably forgetting some talent, but it felt like this was a much better area that they were going to be in. And they have just not hit the mark. And even Finn. The Finn scene, I think, is one of the bigger marks they missed. They should have gone directly into him and Cole. And they waited way too long. And now I don't know if that even matters anymore. Because Finn feels colder than he was on the main roster.
Finn feels invisible.
He's invisible to me.
I feel like he's destined for Japan again.
Yeah, because Finn Balor, I mean, when he came to NXT and he did the turn on Johnny, I think that was the right thing to do. And even in his takeover match that he had, it felt like he was getting hot again. And now he just seems wiped off the page. Walter and all the NXT UK feels off the page. And Cole, I actually cannot tell you the last time I've heard any buzz about anything with the Undisputed Era or Adam Cole. Can you?
No, I can't.
Like, nothing. Everything I've heard has been about Gargano and Keith Lee or Cross and Ciampa, for the most part. And then whatever's going on with Chelsea Green and then this women's match with Io, Ripley, and Charlotte, which will be fantastic. But the Charlotte stuff has been very minimal buzz, and they just kind of rolled her on SmackDown for no reason. It's the first time the main roster has more buzz than NXT in a long time.
It's very weird.
It is. And I don't know if the pandemic's to blame for it, if they've just hit a point, if it's not the right roster right now and the combinations of things, if it's going against AEW. I don't know what it is. I don't really have an answer for it. Do you?
I think there's a lot of factors in it.
Yeah, there is. So we'll see. I mean, TakeOver's next week. I'm still excited for TakeOver next week. I mean, it's the in your house gimmick, I think, was a nice touch. It's going to bring some nostalgia back to all of us. I guess the last thing I want to talk to you before we get out of here, Joel, because we've gone longer than we thought, as always. But is what you think about the fans that WWE finally initiated in?
It's interesting. I mean, they're forced to stand up there for a long time. So that's one thing that I'm kind of like, I'm kind of curious how guys are holding up. But apparently the crowd was dying, and then Brian and AJ brought them back to life. But they have to stand there for like 7 hours. So it's...
You had Malcolm Bavins and Casey Catanzaro were in the crowd from what I saw. By the way, some of the TakeOver matches, and we'll talk about this next week, but Finn is on the card. Did you know that?
Yeah. He's facing Damian Priest.
And Adam Cole is facing Velveteen for the title. Last chance match. If Dream loses, he can no longer challenge for the NXT champion while Cole is still the champion. So that's interesting. The Ciampa and Cross and Keith Lee and Gargano. So we'll preview it later in the week. Like I said, I'm still excited for this show. And then, I mean, it's a lot of WWE coming up, Joel, because the next week we get to see the greatest wrestling match of all time.
I think this is where we end it, because you can't top the greatest wrestling match of all time. All other wrestling companies should just shut down. Cause...
I mean, it's the greatest wrestling match of all time. It's Edge and Randy Orton. The greatest wrestling match of all time. I'm ready for that.
I've got no comment.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to us. I know times are it's a crazy 2020. Be respectful, be vocal, and until next time, everyone, cheers and enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye! Mm-hmm. And good night. Bang!